And now, an Envision Financial podcast with Luke Smith on Canberra's 2CC.
I can't believe it's Friday afternoon again already. It comes around so quickly, and that means it's time to welcome to the studio once again from Envision Financial, Luke Smith. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Here to talk about money matters today. And our topic today is taking a PSS benefit and whether or not a full pension is right for me. Well, let's start with the obvious question. What exactly is a PSS benefit?
Yeah, so this one is becoming more and more of a challenge, and I'm having a number of queries about how my PSS benefit can be accessed. And I think some of the general information that people get is lacking. So PSS is one of the defined benefit schemes, obviously, in the ACT. We've got CSS, PSS. We've got DFRDB and MSPS, which are the military equivalents. So PSS is primarily a lump sum fund with a pension option. And the fund has a set formula, which determines the market value of your accumulated benefit. And then you have a choice. Do I take it as a lump sum? Do I take it as a pension? Do I take it as a pension and a lump sum? And that's where today we just want to sort of demystify some of the rules and regs around what you can do, because you need to do what's right for you. And I've had a number of instances this week where we've had three extremes. The lump sum was appropriate, and you don't see that very often. A full pension was appropriate, and a part pension was appropriate. So really today we just want to touch on how you can do it, why you may do it, and then to sort of wrap up, how can you maximise the value of your entitlement when you finish? So if we start with the general options, you can take a full pension with your benefit. Now, this fund operates a little bit differently to a standard superannuation fund because you have the capacity to retire at 55 years of age, not Commonwealth preservation age of 60, and take a pension option. You also have the ability to take part pension, part lump sum. Now, there's a caveat there. If you go down that part pension road and say you had, keep the numbers round, $1 million, and you took $500,000 as a pension and $500,000 as a lump sum, if you are under your Commonwealth preservation age, it must get rolled to a complying super fund. So the first thing I want people to keep in mind is, if I take that, I get $500,000? No. It has to be rolled into a complying super fund, and then the standard Commonwealth preservation age is applied, which is 60, where you're born after 1965. So keep that in mind. The other thing that I find is very poorly communicated from the fund itself is the rules state that if you take a pension, you must take at least 50% of your benefit as an income stream. And the at least part is overlooked by 99% of people. Because when you go to the government and say, can I get an estimate of my retirement, please? And you give them a date, they will spit you out an audited report that says, hey, here's our calculation out of our system. Full pension is this. Half pension is this. Lump sum is this. Full lump sum is that. By default, they will not give you 87% pension, 92% pension, 58% pension, and whatever else you want to consider, which I want people to be aware of, because in some situations, you might retire and say, oh, I've got $50,000 left on the house, I want a new car, and I'd like to be able to do X. Okay, well, maybe taking a full pension, which is paid to you as an income stream, will limit your capacity to do those specific objectives. You might then go to the government and say, hey, give me my standard estimates, but then could I have 87% pension because the 13% that I want as a lump sum could be paid to me over 60 and cover A, B and C as a capital expense. But I want people to know that you don't have to take 50 or 100. I find everybody comes in with an estimate and goes, it's this or this. And then you make them aware of, well, it could be that. Oh, that changes everything. And that's really the key takeout is take your benefits the way that suits your lifestyle and your objectives. I had another case this week where husband and wife, both in the fund, and we're about to undertake a massive property project. So one had said, okay, I'll take the full pension. You take half. That will give us the capital to do X. And then we've got half pension, full pension, that more than covers our living costs. And then we can trot out and do some contracting work, work weekends at Bunnings, whatever it is that you want to do. So you need to understand, what do I need to live on? Where am I going to get it from? And then how do I take the composition of my benefits in a way that suits me or us the best, especially where you may have a difference in age between spouses?
So as a point of clarification, if you are choosing to take a combination of part pension and part lump sum,
yep,
the rules require you to take at least 50% as the pension.
Correct.
But it can be any number more than 50%, all the way up to 100%, in which case you're not taking any lump sum at all.
Exactly right. And I find that is missed by 99% of people that get the generic reporting from the fund. And that's really important, because you might have estate planning considerations. Say you're a single parent and you take a full pension. If you exhaust the capital value of your fund by receiving a pension for 10 or 15 years, it doesn't revert to anybody. It's taken by the government. So from an estate planning perspective, you might say, well, I'll take part pension, I'll take part lump sum, because then I have estate planning control over the lump sum of money. That may be your primary objective. And it's not about, is it right, is it wrong? It's not about, is it good, is it bad? It's, what do I need? Or what do we need as a family? And what controls do I want to be able to take advantage of? Because this is an amazing fund, and it is wildly, wildly generous. And that's why it's been shut for 2 decades. Because the numbers are absolutely bonkers when you work out what the entitlement is in the form of a pension from the lump sum that is calculated. Now, people also need to keep in mind that if you are a member of this fund, and we've talked about this in previous shows, you are able to make deductible contributions to a standard super fund outside of the PSS. Another big misconception is people come in and say, well, I'm making a 10% contribution to the PSS, that's the most I can do. Yes, within that fund, that is correct. However, if you look at your 2023 statement, for example, and you go to page 5, the PSS actually illustrate to you on the bottom of page 5 of your annual report. They say, we have used X amount of your employer benefits against the concessional contribution cap that was $27,500 until 30 June, that is now $30,000. So if you're not sure what you can put into super, look at page 5 of that report, and I'm talking about the 2023 reports because the 24s aren't out yet. Page 5 says your concessional contribution reporting amount is $15,000. That means this year, if it was the same, you could put $15,000 into superannuation by salary sacrifice or personal deductible contribution and lower your taxable income by that amount as part of a broader superannuation strategy, whilst also maximising your entitlements within the PSS. So again, don't assume that you can only put money into the PSS. You cannot salary sacrifice into that fund. Again, that's just the rule of that fund. The way that fund is created, they just don't allow it. We're not saying that there's a better fund. We're not saying that at all. We're just saying you just cannot salary sacrifice or make personal deductible contributions into that fund. Use another fund and then either salary sacrifice or make a personal deductible payment, and that'll reduce your taxable income by the space that is on your statement. If you haven't got your statement and you want to check for this year, you can log in or you can call them up and just say, hey, what's my concessional contribution cap amount? They will tell you what's been recorded because it's set at the start of the financial year, and that will give you an idea as to managing salary sacrifice if that's how you want to do it for the remainder of the financial period.
So basically, if you're in a PSS fund, you can make extra contributions to superannuation, just not in that fund. You have to have another fund where you make your extra contributions.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And I think that's where people need to think about, what do we need to retire on? How can we? Everyone loves a tax deduction, right? And you should be exploring tax deductions because nobody wants to pay any more than they need to. But you also then need to consider, when you do go to take your benefits, okay, what are the implications from a cash flow perspective? What are the implications from a total super balance or a transfer balance cap perspective? Because if you take a very large pension out of the PSS, you could actually use up all of your transfer balance cap, which would mean that any accumulated super in your own name, you may not be able to start a pension because you could have exceeded the limit. So then you might be thinking about a recontribution strategy to a spouse where they may be able to start a tax-free pension. So again, the PSS is part of a broader estate planning strategy from a superannuation standpoint, and maximising your entitlements should be looked at holistically between a PSS pension, a PSS lump sum, some rent, some other super, and whatever else you have to fund yourself in retirement, not just looked at in isolation or, oh, all the ladies at school, they're doing this. Well, all the ladies at school may not know what you have going on. So you need to do what's right for you, not what the water cooler talk is, you know, in the lunchroom.
Indeed. So have you got any other tips on how people can maximise their benefits before they retire?
Yeah, so I think, and I don't say you must a lot of stuff, but I think if you're not making a 10% contribution to the PSS and you're a member of this fund, it's unique in the fact that you cannot catch up lost time. With normal super, you can make additional contributions over and above an annual limit with certain rules. With the PSS, you cannot catch up any year that you have not made a 10% contribution over your working life. And I would almost go as far to say, get it to 10% to the detriment of any other financial decision. That is how wildly generous this fund is when you finish. And I would get that to 10% and have a bigger mortgage on my house. That's how important, and that illustrates the magnitude of the value of this fund over your working life as a member. You also want to then use up accumulated leave, and we've had discussions in the past around, do I cash out leave, do I stay in? I've been a big advocate of using up leave and staying in the fund, because one of the key parts of the formula to work out your benefit is the accrued benefit multiple, and that is a representation of your rate of contribution. Now, if you're using up leave and staying in the fund, you're maximising that number so that you maximise the formula to get the highest lump sum possible that you can then choose how you take. You want to exit after your birthday to maximise superannuation assumptions in relation to wage. If you've been in a higher duties role, try and stay in that for at least 12 months, because that gets then directed towards your FAS or your final average salary, which is a high watermark. So if you do go back to something later, you keep that high watermark in relation to salary, because the other key part of the formula is the final average salary in the last 3 years. But that high watermark can be really advantageous. You get that high watermark by being in a role for more than 12 months. So when people go to leave, you take your final average salary, you multiply it by all your years of contribution, which is the accrued benefit multiple, and that gives you the market value of your benefit. And if you look at a 2023 statement, they've got these lovely big blue boxes, FAS by ABM equals dollar value. And then all you do to work out your potential pension is you divide that lump sum value by the pension conversion factor for your age, which is set in the legislation of the fund. So it's quite complicated yet quite simple, but I would just want people to take, there are a number of ways you can maximise that, and time is not your friend in this fund. You need to make the most of every year where you can.
Yeah, it's a lot to think about, and that's why we have people like you. Luke Smith from Envision Financial is with me this afternoon. We're talking about how to take your PSS benefit and whether a full pension is right for you, or perhaps a part pension and a part lump sum, or even just an entire lump sum. We'll be back with more in just a moment. Luke Smith from Envision Financial is with me in the studio this afternoon talking money matters once again, and today's topic is all about taking your PSS benefit. We've covered a lot of ground so far, so I guess, Luke, it's time to do a little bit of a recap. What are the key things for people to remember about how to make the most of their pension options if they're a member of the PSS?
Yeah, so the first thing I do is make sure you're making a 10% contribution. And I say, I don't say you must do a lot of stuff, but I think you are robbing yourself of a very, very secure and generous income stream if you are not making a 10% contribution to the detriment of just about anything else. And that could be having a slightly higher mortgage on your house, and that'll be very controversial. Using offset account money from other investment properties, savings, cash, anything else at any cost, I would be getting money into that fund at 10%. Obviously work on getting your final average salary as high as possible. If you can stay in a higher duties role for more than 12 months and get that high watermark applied to your final average salary, that's really, really good. if you're going to take leave, use up your leave as opposed to cashing it out. Twofold benefit there. One, you're accruing leave on leave. And two, you're continuing to add to your accrued benefit multiple, which is the representation of your 10% contribution. So you're bolstering your final pension numbers. Use a pension that's right for you. Consider your options and go to the fund and ask for some variances from 100% or 50%. Remember that you can have at least 50%. So if you want 55, 92, 87, 74, 68, ask them for an estimate and they will quite happily do it for you so that you can see the difference between an income stream and a lump sum, because you may want to use the lump sum to pay off an investment property, buy a new boat, buy a new car, give some money to the kids, equalise estate planning, control money through your will. So think about how you're going to take the pension and take it in a way that suits you the best, not what all the ladies say at work or what all the lads say at golf on a Saturday. This is what you need to do, because I find there's a lot of that, and that can influence people's decision because they come in with a preconceived idea and then work out that, oh, hang on, I've got a lot of other options and some other risks that I need to consider. Make sure that you look at dual membership. If you're lucky enough to have partner and partner in this fund, think about the composition of your benefit. Do you take a full pension? I take half pension. And then keep in mind that you can make deductible contributions to another super fund to lower your taxable income. That has no bearing on your rate of contribution in the PSS, but they do reflect the employer part of your membership. On page 5 of the 2023 statement, it says your concessional contribution allowance is X. You take that away from the annual limit, and that's what you can put into another super fund, either by salary sacrifice or by personal deductible contribution. So again, don't assume that PSS is the only horse in the race. And it's actually advantageous for you to consider another fund to lower your taxable income, but just take a benefit that is right for you and make the most of this wonderfully, wonderfully generous fund.
Indeed. So, Luke, that brings us to the point where I ask you, where can listeners get more information?
Yeah, office number is still 6260-4749. We've got envisionfinancial.com.au on the internet. We've got the Strategy Stacker, Luke Talks Money, on iTunes and Spotify. We've got Envision Financial Canberra, where we've got all of the shows on YouTube. You can watch it on your phone on the couch. We've got YouTube Shorts. We've got the Strategy Stacker on the Tiki Tocker. And we've got Smart Money Strategy, your ultimate guide to financial planning, in all good bookstores and online.
Fantastic, Luke. Thank you so much, and we'll catch you again next Friday.
See you next week.
Indeed. Luke Smith from Envision Financial back with us again at the same time next Friday right here on 2CC.